All participants, please stand by. Your conference is ready to begin. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Peyto Exploration and Development Corp second quarter results call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Darren Gee, President and CEO. Mr. Gee, please go ahead.
Great. Well, thank you, Catherine. And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Peyto's second quarter 2016 results conference call. Before we get started today, I'd like to remind everybody that all statements made by the company during this call are subject to the same forward-looking disclaimer and advisory set forth in the company's second quarter news release that we issued yesterday, so please keep that in mind. In the room with me today is all of the Peyto management team, consisting of Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer, Kathy Turgeon, our Chief Financial Officer. We've got Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration here, J.P. Lachance, our VP of Exploitation, Tim Louie, our VP of Land, Lee Curran, our VP of Drilling and Completions, and Todd Burdick, our VP of Production. The one person who isn't here today, though, is Jim Grant, and I have the sad job of informing those listeners that our longtime investor relations representative, Jim Grant, passed away suddenly in his home on June 6th. We are still feeling his loss around the offices of Peyto, and I expect we will for some time. Jim was forever the optimist and a huge believer and supporter of the Peyto strategy. He'd been with Peyto and the Peyto team here for over 12 years, and we will all miss him dearly. But I know that he'd want us to soldier on, so in his honor, that is exactly what we're doing. Before I get started with my comments about the quarter and the results today, I do want to send out a big thank you to the entire Peyto team for toughing it out in what was a bit of a frustrating quarter. Both weather delays and road bans and that kind of thing frustrated our efforts to get the work done that we wanted to get done this past quarter. And then even when we finally did get it done, we had to be very disciplined and put our results on the sidelines to wait for better prices rather than immediately see the fruits of our labors. We're normally used to getting volumes on, not turning volumes off. But we know in the long run that it was the right thing to do to generate greater returns for our shareholders, and since that's why we're all here, that's what we did. So anyway, on behalf of all the shareholders, I think a big thank you goes out to the entire Peyto team for that effort over the second quarter. On to second quarter results. We continue to drill through much of the second quarter, trying to take advantage of the cost savings that we're experiencing. Average drilling and completion costs in the second quarter were less than $2.5 million per well. And you compare that to $3.4 million last year and $4.4 million in 2014. That's a big difference. We're basically drilling the same well today for almost half of what it cost us in 2014. And considering we're getting basically the same result, in fact, the last look at the results, probably a slightly better result than a couple of years ago, and considering the long-term outlook for natural gas prices today is still probably about 75 to 80% of what it was 2 years ago, then we know we're getting even better returns than we were then. So, of course, we want to do as much as we can at these costs. But that didn't mean we could bring the new wells on right away because we saw the summer pricing was going to be too low, and exposing all that flush production to an extremely low price would, of course, hammer the returns. So we left them offline, about 17,400 BOEs a day in total, and we're only now starting to bring on that gas as gas prices start to get over $2 and approach that $2.50 level. So as I mentioned earlier, that required some discipline and some understanding that it was the smarter thing to do from a returns perspective. And it also required some insurance that we would get that $2.50 gas price when we did bring these wells on. So we were actively hedging throughout the quarter, in fact, at a greater level than we normally do, ensuring that we'd at least get that price for this fall and winter when we did bring all that production back on. As anyone in Alberta already knows, it's been a very rainy spring and summer, and that isn't helping operations in the field. But we've dealt with wet weather before, and we'll work around it this year as well. We're doing more and more pad drilling, and, of course, that's helping to keep things very concentrated in one area so we don't have to move around as much. On the financial side of things, cash costs were up slightly, mostly because of the volumes we held offline. Had those volumes been on, then, of course, our fixed costs would have been spread over more production and our cash costs would have been closer to that 70 cent per MCFE target that we've set at the start of the year. Q1 was, I think, just over that number, and Q2, if we had our volumes on, would have been pretty close to that number as well. So we are expecting that as our volumes ramp back up, our total cash costs are going to come down to that target level. Funds from operations were a little over $100 million, while capital expenditures were just over $50 million and dividends of $53 million. So really, we had about the same amount coming in the door as going out. And since we closed an equity financing of $165 million net to us in the quarter, we saw our net debt drop by just about that amount. We were also one of the only companies in the industry that I can find to post earnings this quarter. Almost everyone else in the industry recorded a loss, which I think puts a very strong exclamation point on the profitability of our investments. So that's just a quick review of the quarter. I want to take the opportunity now, though, since we have the entire Peyto management team in the room today, to ask maybe each of them to provide some additional color and hopefully in the process answer some of the questions that we've seen coming in from investors overnight. So I'm going to start with Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer. Scott, I know your guys have been doing a bunch of work behind the scenes on environmental stewardship. That's a big theme these days. The results of that hopefully we can be putting out in our first ever report. But one of the initiatives you were talking about was reducing both our trucking charges and reducing the environmental impact of all those trucks on the road with respect to our natural gas liquids production. Can you talk a bit about that initiative?
Yeah, sure, Darren. On the report that you speak of, maybe I'll just say a couple of comments on the sustainability report and then get into the specifics of that trucking initiative. As we all know, Peyto's business has been built on a platform of efficiency and simplicity, and with a real strong culture on an acute focus on cost and waste. When we take a look at some of the parameters that one puts in these sustainability reports, it's no surprise that many of the dimensions and measures of those kinds of reports show Peyto in a very favorable position. I think when we get this report out, which should come out here in the next couple months, we will see that Peyto is at the forefront of many of the measures. These measures include such things as the energy efficiency of our energy production, our greenhouse gas emissions. We've talked a little bit about that. Our footprints out there on the lands, how much land we consume. We've actually cut it in half over the last few years in terms of the footprint on a per well basis. Our water management, that's a huge theme in these sustainability reports, and we've made tremendous gains. We're recycling about 75% of our flowback water now. So some of these things are going to emerge in this report. But one of the longstanding ones is the leanness of the organization. We've got a little over 50 employees with an average of 1,800 barrels of production per employee. So I think readers will be impressed at how Peyto is looking after the business, and it really is just emerging from looking after the fundamental cost of the business. These things kind of take care of themselves. With respect to this trucking project, this pertains to a subset of our greater Sundance area, our four big plants, Old Man, Old Man North, Nose Hill, and Swanson. And what we're looking at, we've got about 6,000 barrels a day of hydrocarbon liquids, our raw condensate, and our refrigerant plant LPG, that we move around the field with trucks, about 6,000 truckloads a year. We're looking at connecting these plants with about 44 kilometers of medium diameter pipe that, when connected, will take these trucks off the road and save us about $4 to $5 million in annual trucking costs and add $2 to $3 per barrel of price realization net back to our liquids. And the elimination of trucking will take about 2,000 tons CO2 equivalent of emissions out of our total emissions footprint. And And, of course, the road wear and tear will be reduced, and road use costs should come down. So these are all good things, and they'll position us for a lot of strength in how we move our products around in the coming years, not just over the next few years, but for the life of these assets that we've developed. So it's a very solid project amongst all the things that we're looking at to improve our netbacks on a regular basis.
Okay, great. Thanks, Scott. That's a fantastic initiative, I think. Next, I'm going to ask Kathy, our Chief Financial Officer. Here's the big question that a lot of investors and shareholders want to know. Kathy, we've stated in the past that we believe that the biggest key to sustainable dividends is that they be paid out of profits. That's what makes logical sense to us. And historically, that's exactly where Peyto's $2 billion in dividends have come from. Of course, the challenge that we've seen over the past few years is matching dividends to earnings when the commodity prices are so volatile and our earnings are moving around so much. This year, dividends are exceeding earnings, but what are you projecting with your financial model of Peyto? When are we projecting to cross back over the other way when earnings might exceed dividends again?
Well, at Peyto, we've never set dividend rates on a short-term, quarter-to-quarter basis, but rather over the longer term to ensure that our dividends are sustainable. Currently, we are paying out more than our earnings and dividends, but our forecasting for 2017 has this trend reversing in the latter half of the year. If we get stronger commodity prices in the current strip of about $2.75 per GJ, this rebalancing would be accelerated. However, if commodity prices weaken and stay low for an extended period of time, it could be longer before earnings again exceed dividends. And at that point, management and the board would reassess the sustainability of current dividend levels.
All right. Good stuff. That's, we're looking forward to that 275 gas then. Next, I want to turn to Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration. And, Dave, we don't often talk about our exploration initiatives that have these longer timelines on them than just the current year that we're busy focused on. But considering every year we add more locations to inventory than we harvest, clearly we're also exploring behind the scenes, and a lot of investors don't really get to see that or hear about that. Is there any way you can tell us, without compromising some of our strategic position, some of the exploration ideas we're chasing?
Well, Darren, I often feel a little bit like a politician trying to talk about exploration without really talking about exploration. But generally, we try to capture opportunities with a disciplined approach, mindful to make full cycle profits. And this is an easy religion to preach, but it's a hard one to follow. But at Peyto, we can point to 11 and a half years of positive earnings as a track record of this approach. As I said before, Brazeau is a great example of Peyto starting from zero, no land, no wells, no facilities, in a brand new area, and slowly over several years building a land position of, I think it's about 129 sections now, with wells currently producing around 75 million a day. And there's lots of opportunity here. Wilrich, Notikewin, Polaire, and recently faulted Cardium. 3D seismic is really key. The seismic was shot over the winter, this last program that we shot, and it's revealed to us over 90 Notikewin channel drilling locations and over 80 faulted Cardium locations, and we'd never have identified those without the seismic. Most recently, we've just licensed 10 new Notikewin horizontals at Brazeau, with more to come shortly. Minehead is another area which we've been slowly adding to if we can acquire opportunities economically under a disciplined approach. We've now a significant land position of over 50 sections in the area, and we've begun to slowly test those lands, specifically Wilrich and Blue Sky. Likewise, at West Wild Hay, we've recently licensed Wilrich and a follow-up Notikewin horizontal and stacked on top of each other to test both those plays in this new area for us. One significant exploration advantage that Peyto holds, and this is really quite significant, it's due to our low cost structure, and we can afford to test some opportunities that other companies just cannot profitably drill. Sometimes this isn't really sexy, but it effectively provides us with a bigger sandbox to explore, as well as giving us a greater depth of development opportunities on the lands we already own. Last year, we added new land inventory with a total of, 193 gross drilling locations, including 98 in the Wilrich, easily exceeding the number of wells we drilled in 2015. So far this year, we've added lands with 75 drill locations, including 51 Wilrich and Nauticuans. So we're off to a bit of a slower pace than last year, but we're still adding inventory faster than we're drilling. For the last half of 2015, our drill schedule includes over 50 Wilrich and Nauticuan locations, and those should very nicely position us for a solid exit to the year.
Awesome. That's some exciting stuff. We'll see that start to manifest itself over the next few quarters and next few years, I'm sure. Next, I want to ask J.P. Lachance, our VP Exploitation. J.P., you know, as a company, we've been pretty adamant that our strategy is driven by returns, not growth, which is why I believe we've been one of the most profitable energy companies in Canada. But can you give us maybe a little bit of color on how profitable this year's capital investments have been so far? And can you give maybe the listeners a sense of just maybe how successful our production deferral strategy was at increasing the returns that we were looking for?
Yeah, sure, Jaron. I think I should start off by saying that the productive results of the wells we've drilled so far this year have been beyond par or better as compared to previous years, and it certainly met our expectations. We do have a little less production data to look at because of our plan to defer new wells, but the fact that we've been able to drill and complete these wells so cheaply this year while continuing to get the productive results we're accustomed to means our returns look really good, even in this price environment. We estimate that the wells drilled to the end of the second quarter will yield us about a 25% internal rate of return on aggregate. Now, that's based on the actual capital we spent on these wells, our unhedged prices in the first half of the year, and the current forward strip. I should point out that, as always, we include a provision for other costs like land, seismic, major facilities, and any operational difficulties that we have to represent the full cycle returns and not just our best outcomes. Now, regionally, the Brazeau area continues to provide some of our better results, and logically, as we've mentioned, we are deploying more capital in that area for the rest of the year. We're adding another rig down there. Now, that's not to say our bread and butter plays in the greater Sundance area have been poor, as they've certainly pulled their weight thus far, producing an estimated 22% composite internal rate of return. I think an important point to make on the timing of production and the deferral strategy that not all our wells were delayed until the price rebounded in Q2. Some wells were indeed produced during the second quarter since we had strategic or contractual reasons for producing them. When we compare that group of wells that we brought on immediately after they were drilled and completed in Q1 and 2 against the wells we deferred to Q3, we see quite a difference in returns between the two sets of wells. Now, there isn't a disparity between the quality or the capital spent of these two groups of wells, but the returns from their deferred wells are estimated to have a combined internal rate of return of 32% as compared to those that were not deferred, and that will appear to yield about a 20% internal rate of return. So I think it's safe to say that the deferral strategy has been very successful, especially considering it was over a shorter period of time than we originally anticipated.
Thanks. Would have been nice to defer it all, but obviously that's not practical. I want to ask a question of Tim Louis, our VP of Land. Tim, you know, Peyto's never really been a very active acquirer of other people's production, but we have at times, I suppose, acquired other people's undeveloped opportunities. This year seems like it's a pretty active year from that perspective. Can you tell our listeners maybe a little more of some of the deals that we've done?
Aaron, you're correct in that Peyto tends to acquire undeveloped opportunities since that is where the upside potential lies. At times, the asset acquisition may include associated production, but in most cases, the production is typically minimal. During the first quarter, all of our acquisitions came from three negotiated deals. The first transaction involved the acquisition of 7 net sections and 550 BOE of production. The second deal, we purchased 9 net sections, a 20% interest in our Galloway gas plant, and 630 BOE of production. The third transaction was an asset exchange where we swapped lands in a non-core area in order to acquire an additional 3.25 net sections. All these deals supplemented our existing land holdings within the Greater Sundance area. In the second quarter, we were successful in acquiring 10 sections at Crown land sales for $1 million. These Crown acquisitions were within the Sundance and Minehead areas. At the end of the quarter, Peyto's land inventory stood at 702 net sections. Although we didn't conclude any negotiated deals during the second quarter, that does not mean the team wasn't seeking opportunities. In fact, we were very busy evaluating and bidding on 2 larger asset packages within the Sundance and Brazos areas. Unfortunately, Peyto was not the successful purchaser. We definitely would have liked to acquire these assets, but we have to be disciplined in our approach to acquisitions to ensure the transaction will yield proper returns to our shareholders. Our efforts to acquire additional lands in our core areas continues for the balance of the year. As mentioned in yesterday's release, Peyto will be acquiring an additional 10 net sections of undeveloped land in the Brazos area. The transaction is anticipated to close next week. We have also negotiated a smaller acquisition in the heart of our Sundance area. This deal encompasses 2.5 net sections, and we expect this deal will close by the end of August.
Good stuff. Thanks, Tim. Let's talk about drilling and completion operations for a sec. Lee, you're our VP of drilling and completions. You've been exceptionally busy this year. At times, I think Peyto's been the most active driller in Canada as we try and take advantage of these really low well costs that we're experiencing. I often tell investors that I think costs are going to go back up again as commodity prices improve, because I think inevitably that tends to be what happens. But I mean, what do you think? Is there anything we can do to mitigate the cost increases? Can we lock in prices or secure rigs or secure people in any way?
Sure, Darren. Service costs have always been directly related to industry activity levels. And although the pace at which things turn around is going to be very much unknown until it occurs, there will be a point in time again when operators are once again fighting to obtain services for their programs. And I would say it's more than a reasonably safe prediction that eventually the shoe will find its way onto the other foot. The service sector has been very industrious in finding ways to best preserve even the thinnest of margins, and not only via trimming their staff and salaries, but really digging into their own cost structure and working with their suppliers to reduce their costs. Now, despite all of their efforts, the past several months have unfortunately brought us witness to the financial collapse of a handful of service providers. Some of those have been staple household names in this basin for decades. Slowly but steadily, those services that continue to survive are gaining position in the market simply by losing some of their competition. I'd argue that there lies a greater risk that an even somewhat modest return of healthier commodities could bring the potential of a rapid and dramatic service price increase to the table. The job loss experienced in our industry over the past year and a half has been marked, and people have moved on. This is going to leave a lasting mark on the industry that simply cannot be resolved at the flick of a switch. This shortage of personnel versus horsepower or equipment is where the real risk of rapid increase to service pricing exists. Supplying enough competent personnel to operate horsepower is going to be the true challenge. Now, I've often talked about the elements that comprise our cost reductions that we've experienced over the past year or so. The components of those reductions being, of course, service price reductions, as well as gains in performance and our technical or engineering revisions. It's safe to say that the technical revisions, provided they've have a positive or at least a neutral impact on well results, are a savings that we expect to retain. The service price reductions, I think my previous rant speaks to that. We're currently experiencing 20 to 25 year lows on a cost per unit basis on many elements of our well construction basket of goods. Drilling day rates are comparable to what was being fetched in the mid to late 90s. quite frankly, this can't last forever. We have a long proven successful strategy of contracting our services, and over the course of time, that's provided us an incremental service price advantage relative to our competitors. Our intent is to toe the line on those strategies. The final element of cost reduction we speak to is performance gains, and the ability to retain this becomes rather difficult to predict given the number of elements that can affect it. Retention of the highest quality staff bears a significant mark on performance, and when busier times do return, many are going to battle for the best and the brightest. This is where we as an industry could lose control on service cost escalation. Here at Peyto, we've not only been busy profitably investing and developing our assets, we've been busy laying the groundwork to protect as much of our cost structure advantage as possible. We've attracted and retained some of the best talent in the basin for more than a decade now. Recently, we reviewed our 10-year anniversary dates for a number of field staff, and we discovered that we have over 20 well site supervisors through our drilling and completion discipline that fall into this category. I think that's probably pretty novel in the industry today. We've developed a robust culture of loyalty that I'm confident will stand the test of a boom. You ask if we can secure people. We've been doing that for a decade. And in doing so, we're not only retaining our gains in performance, but we're setting ourselves up to further improve upon those gains through an eventual return of heightened activity.
Thanks, Lee. I think you're right. I think the people are going to be key, and right now we've got them, and we've got to hang on to them. So maybe I'll end with our VP of Production, Todd Burdick. If you don't get off the hook, I'm going to ask you a question too. Todd, you get charged with the very challenging job of driving down our operating costs, which of course becomes increasingly difficult considering we have already the lowest costs in the industry. But we spend a lot of money each year handling a lot of this frack flowback water from our completions, especially once a well is on production, and we end up recovering it through production operations and at our plants. And I understand you've got some water recycling initiatives underway, as well as some other operating cost reduction initiatives. Can you talk about that, and what's the goal, and how much do you think we could shave off our already low operating costs?
Yeah. So recently we've been working with our completions group whereby they've been sourcing water from our gas plants and well pads around the greater Sundance area to supplement the water requirements for frack operations. When we bring new wells on production, they produce a large volume of the unrecovered frack water over the first 6 months. Since we started horizontal drilling, we've seen our disposal cost per unit of production double. So this initiative is a great opportunity to take a step forward or take a step towards a meaningful reduction to our disposal costs and in turn reduce our operating costs by as much as a penny per MCFE. It's interesting that when we look at our operating costs that just over 70% of the costs fall into just seven cost categories. And of that group, two categories account for 60% of those costs. So it's those two categories, contract operating labor and produced water trucking, that we began focusing on about a year ago. By taking advantage of some of the technology available in the industry, we've incorporated the use of a GPS fleet tracking system in conjunction with our field data capture to optimize the movement of produced water in the field. That has meant that trucks are not making needless stops at wells to pick up small amounts of water, and they're able to plan their day so that when they travel to dispose of the water, their trucks are full. Where our operators are concerned, by using our state-of-the-art SCADA system, we've been able to increase the number of wells each operator is able to look after without compromising safety or production. We've seen our wells per operator count increase just over this past year by 14%. As a result of these changes, these two variable components of the OPEX are down a total of 6% or 4 cents per MCFE year over year. So yes, while it's difficult to continue to drive down our already lowest industry operating costs, by being creative and having strong support at the field level, we're making it happen.
Awesome. I like pennies. Pennies off for good. One last question for you, Todd, and this just sort of popped up this morning here that I wanted to ask about was our C3 or our propane pricing sounds like it's changed just recently to be back in the black again. We've had a couple of quarters here where we've realized negative propane prices, and so cut a lot of our propane production right out, left it in the gas. Now that prices are better, what are we doing with propane recoveries and plant setup, and what do you expect for production impact and price realizations for propane?
So in mid-June, we signed a new month-to-month deal at our Old Man delivery point. With this deal, we get a premium over gas value for liquid propane. Additionally, the deal is structured so that delivery is FOB, the plant site, which means we pay no tariff or fractionation fee. So at $2.50 per GJ AECO gas price, we get about $11 per barrel for our propane. So we're no longer rejecting propane at our six gas plants in Greater Sundance, and we're seeing about an extra 1,000 barrels a day of NGLs, mostly in the form of propane. This should bring our NGL pricing back down to our historical averages, about 75% of light oil. It's also worth noting that we haven't started up the deep cut at Old Man. This premium is insufficient to cover the additional operating costs associated with the deep cut.
Great. Okay, great. Thanks, everybody, for all that additional color. Catherine, maybe we can throw the lines open and take some questions from those investors that are listening in.
Certainly. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. You may cancel your question by pressing the pound key. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while the participants register. We thank you for your patience. Our first question is from Fei Li of Odlum Brown. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi. Thanks. It's Fi here. First, I want to offer my condolences to Jim's family. I think Jim was a great investor relations, one of the best investor relations persons I've ever dealt with in the industry, and really sorry to hear about his loss, your loss. In terms of there was some commentary about retaining good people, I guess both through the down cycle and in the up cycle. Given that you have only 51 full-time employees, I'm just wondering what the strategy is for keeping some of those good people that may not necessarily be working for you directly. If you can comment on that, that'd be great. Thanks.
Fi, thanks for the condolences. You know, the people issue is, you know, I've written about that in my monthly report. Lee talked about that. It's definitely one that we're focused on, not just keeping existing staff busy, bringing new people into the organization and into the industry even is important too, and that's hard because these days, you know, working in the energy space doesn't seem nearly as exciting perhaps as it used to. But, you know, I think it's an issue that we have to be very sensitive to. We've got to. This is a fun industry, really. At the end of the day, I mean, I've been in it a long time, and it's always challenging, and it's always changing, and it is an exciting industry. But maybe our entire industry has to do a better job of selling itself a little bit. You know, there are some specific things I think we can do. I know, Lee. What do you think?
Sure. Yeah. It's an interesting question. How do you retain those that aren't directly attached to the company and possibly directly attached to you know, the corporate successes that we've been experiencing? That said, as I mentioned, and perhaps it was a little generic, we've been doing that with indirect field personnel for over a decade now. We have rig level position individuals that have been in our fleet for longer than I've been here, and I just celebrated my 10th anniversary as well. So through these times when industry's slow, Peyto really shines to those field level positions that are able to, feed their families and keep their lifestyle that they've grown accustomed to. Perhaps they've suffered slight salary level reductions, but for the most part, it's a good place to work. It's been very reliable as far as a source of income for them. And, I think people do have very good memories. And when things turn around, I think they'll have a solid memory of the fact that Peyto's provided them employment through good times and bad, and that's the way we've operated for a long time.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Todd, what about our guys in the field, our operators and stuff? What do you think?
Yeah, it's the same thing. I think our turnover has dropped to almost nothing over the last several years, and similar to what Lee said, we went through the same exercise, and there was, I can't remember the exact number, it was over 10 operators that had been with Peyto for over 10 years, and they really appreciate, and I hear it lots when I go up to the field, they really appreciate what we do, how they're treated, and it manifests itself in their care about our production and our assets. And
I think over the last 10, 15 years, we've always had a high level of responsibility and therefore a high level of job satisfaction amongst the people. And then we treat them well when we reap the rewards. It gets shared right out to not just to the 51 people in Calgary, but the hand reaches out to each and every one of these field individuals, and it always has. As you stated, Todd, there's very much high level of satisfaction and very low attrition. And Lee, you pointed out that the character of these people, they remember, and they're faithful to the cause and the organization. So at this point, I don't think we have much risk in that aspect of our business.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, that's great. Thanks for the comments.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 if you have a question. Our next question is from David Popowicz of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question today, guys. As I'm sure you're aware, there's been a lot of industry chatter about TransCanada potentially reducing its mainline tolls. I was just, wondering what you guys could say with respect to that in terms of how you weigh the benefits of locking up long-term egress versus, potentially, tolls that are higher than what you're paying now, just how you weigh the costs and benefits of that. And if you do see a reduction in mainline tolls as potentially, impacting supply costs in Western Canada.
Thanks for the question, Dave. It's a hard one to answer succinctly because there's a lot of moving parts in there. But, from a high level, I would start by saying that, at Peyto, we've always tried to have the highest operating margin we possibly can to protect us from the volatility of the commodity price. So extremely low cost structure and having the most buffer from the variability that we'd see in, say, natural gas prices. So historically, our operating margin is somewhere 75 to 80%. That's all cash costs taken off of the revenue, right? So what are you left with at the end of the day? We've got a very high percentage. Unlike perhaps, say, an oil sands producer, which, they might be getting $100 a barrel for their oil at times, but have $80 a barrel costs. Well, that's a very thin margin, and they don't have a lot of buffer between changes in the oil price, whether they're making any money or making no money. So when we think about things like adding a significant amount of transportation costs to our cost base to only get the same proportionate increase in the commodity price, we're really shrinking our margin and becoming a little bit more exposed then to the volatility in the commodity price. So that's one of the considerations for sure. you know, the main line, what TransCanada is proposing is pretty much a bullet shot all the way to Dawn. You are committing yourself to a certain market. You know, when we get to AECO, there is more option in terms of where the gas can go, and so hopefully built into the AECO price is that optionality. You're not tied into the same market. And I think, you know, from our experience over the last couple of years in Alberta, with a lot of the restrictions on the NovaGas system, some of the cuts to our firm service for maintenance and that kind of thing, it's been very frustrating for us. And you know, to take on a bunch of mainline transportation, if we can't get our gas onto the system to begin with because we're faced with restrictions in Alberta, then you're going to be left with paying a lot of firm toll on a pipeline that you can't even use because you can't even get your gas to it. So, you know, I think if we were to think about taking on any kind of mainline transportation, we would have to renegotiate, I think, the service that we've got in Alberta to make sure that we can always get our gas on the system so that we can get at that service that we would be taking on the mainline. Otherwise, it would require a lot of gas balancing, I think. Maybe I'll ask Scott Robinson, our COO, if he's got any further comments.
I think you nailed it there. You know, we've always looked at as the Alberta marketplace has been very liquid and haven't seen a lot of advantages in getting sophisticated with down, you know, long-haul movement of our gas. And that's rewarded us, that flexibility. We've never hamstrung ourselves with one direction or another. And I think, Darren, you know, that's exactly what we want to stick with, is maintaining that flexibility. The marketplace will sort some of these things out. There's a little blip going on right now that's going to sort out shortly here. And, you know, as long as we protect our cost structure, we'll be good. We'll fit into that marketplace regardless of what direction it heads here. And, you know, we talked a little bit about some of our cost advantages. Those advantages, they translate right across North America, not just in Alberta. And I think that we'll see Peyto continue to, you know, to take top shelf position regardless of whether we're looking at Marcellus players or you know, Eagle for players or whatever the case may be. So we'll just keep our eye on what's happening out there. But at this point, we don't see a need to really adjust our marketing and transportation strategy.
Thanks. And just to follow up, I mean, Darren, you referenced the fact that, you know, we've seen some cuts to firm capacity on the Nova system, you know, in the past year, 18 months. I mean, in your mind, what alleviates that situation, if anything, in the next year or so? Or do you continue to see, you know, basically a full system on firm capacity, you know, hampered by maintenance here and there?
No, I think, you know, the low gas price we've been in this year, that's not driving a lot of activity. I think we're going to see continued decline in the basin production. Yes, there's a shift. You know, when we look at what the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin total production volumes, they've been dropping, obviously, over the last several years. But there is a shift within Alberta where the gas is coming from, more to the West 5, along the foothills, along that Peace River mainline system. So the Deep Basin and the Montney are the only places where people are adding gas. Everywhere else, it's been shrinking quite a bit. And you know, arguably, maybe the oil sands demand is going to not grow quite as fast as everybody was projecting at $100 oil, but there is still significant Alberta demand growth. You know, the NDP government's talking about more coal to gas switching, so that's going to be good for growing our internal demand. I think personally the access to the Nova system is going to improve. I think as we see contracts at Dawn renewed for this winter, you know, I think that's going to alleviate some of the issues with controlling the flow on the upstream end because of the demand on the downstream end. You know, and I think we're going to see the effect of the lack of drilling in the U.S. too. And we're seeing already some volumes in the first half of the year start to decline in the U.S. basins. That's going to open up some room for Canadian gas as well. So you know, as long as the pull is there on the system, then there shouldn't be any restrictions on the upstream end. And really, I think the commodity price has kind of set the tone for how much draw there's going to be on the other end.
Terrific. Thanks, guys.
You bet. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. We have no further questions registered at this time. I would now like to return the meeting over to Mr. G.
All right. Well, thank you, Catherine. I understand it is a busy morning this morning. I think 17 issuers releasing their results this morning, so lots of conference calls going on. But thanks for listening in, and we'll be back to you with some Q3 results in November. It's going to be a very busy fall for us. We're going to be trying to do as much as we can possibly do here, working around the mud puddles. But it should be a very exciting third quarter, so stay tuned, and we'll be back to you then.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.